Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I am so excited to be back. I can't believe how long it's been. I took like an unannounced 3-week break, which is very uncommon for me. It's the first time that I've ever done that on the show since I started this back in 2019. Oh my God. 5 years. My goodness. I didn't even think of it like that, but wow, 5 years. A lot of stuff to get into, a lot of things to talk about on today's episode. Obviously, there was the stand-up comedy tour. Right here at the top of the show, let me just go ahead and say, for those listening who may have not seen the comedy special yet, well, if you like me and you like my comedy or my videos or you're just a good friend tuning in, please go to the link. It's in the show notes of this episode and probably the next 100 episodes. It's very special to me. It's my first like kind of proper, you know, hour-long comedy special. We shot it here in Munich. My chair is sinking. Hold on. We shot it here in Munich, the last show of the full tour, and I'm really proud of it. It's the second hour that I've done live. The first one I did the beginning of this year, back in January at the Mila. A lot of things have changed since then. I'm really proud of what this year has churned out for the comedy career stuff since then, because that was just like my little first little baby back in January. You know, I did that show twice, but I never properly like toured it and filmed it. There is a recording of that show, actually of both performances. There's a recording. The second one is just like a stationary conference room camera where I performed at this building called the America House, like this cool government building in Munich. But anyway, but that's the second hour I've done. And although the first ones were filmed, there's something about just that first, you know, getting it out of your system thing where you're hypercritical and, you know, rightfully so. And I can tell that it's just not my best work. I think there's great in the very first one, I mean, not the one that I want you to watch in the very first one that's not available online, except for some clips. There's great stories in there and there's great moments, and I'm happy with it because it's, you know, it helped, get me a booking agent. It helped get me, you know, damn, I got to get a new chair. It helped get me, you know, to the place that I am now. I'm very happy with it, but it's not like a professional show that I feel like I could put out into the world and with open arms and say, hey, this is me. You know, I needed some time to hone the confidence and work on the skills a bit. And, you know, a lot of comedians, you know, won't dare, you know, even hint at putting something out for decades. And, you know, that's rightfully so. I feel like I keep telling people that this isn't a, I mean, it's easier to market it as a stand-up comedy special. That's a phrase people have heard a lot more. But in my personal life, I tend to call it like comedic storytelling, because it's not really pure stand-up comedy. I have a lot of friends who do stand-up comedy, and they do it a lot, and they do it a lot better than anything that I do. But I just enjoy telling these stories and trying to do it the funniest way that I can. And, you know, being physical, but also emphasizing punchlines and doing it the way that I think just suits me. I'm very keen on how certain words are emphasized, how they feel in the mouth. I will write down phrases and then change a couple of words because of the way that they hit, like in my teeth. It's hard to explain, but the way they feel as I say them is very important. And that little thing will end up being the the key to memorization for me, actually. I don't know if that comes back from, you know, doing theater and stuff back in college, but the memorization of an hour and 10-minute long show, you have to have some little hooks and tricks and little things that your brain can latch onto. And sometimes for me, it's the way that the words sit in the mouth. Like, it's hard to explain, but anyway, the point being, this is the second comedy special, but this is the first one that I feel confident enough to put out there. I would say it's more comedic storytelling, but I'm very proud of it. It's in the show notes, and we have a lot to talk about regarding the tour of this show and what the plans look like for the future, and we're going to get into that basically now. But just please, if you're a fan or a friend, go in the show notes or go to my YouTube. It's the main video on my main YouTube page. I'm very proud of the amount of views it's gotten in just a few days. I think it by the time you guys hear this, it'll have been out for maybe a week or so. And, you know, it's an hour and 10 minutes long, and to already be at, you know, whatever it is now, 1,500 views. That's, for me, that's a win. Like, that for me is a lot. It's going to take a long time for me to get, you know, something that long, something that digestible, something that, you know, thick to chew on, to a view count that's, you know, in the 6-digit range. You know, that's a dream one day to hopefully get up there in that range. But you know, it takes time. So for me at this moment to put something out that long, that you really have to kind of, you know, you can watch it in stretches or break it up, you know, watch a little bit on the toilet, watch a little bit over your coffee, watch a little bit when you're cooking dinner. Yeah, that's all fine and good, man. If you guys are watching it, that means a lot to me. Sharing it, liking it, subscribing to my YouTube channel. And it just encourages me to, you know, put more stuff out there for you and hopefully keep doing this. And we have basically, please just go watch it. Okay, so the tour. There's a whole mess of things. I will say there was also like partial reasons of the break. I mean, the tour was a big part of it. And then coming right back from the tour and immediately having things lined up that I needed to do. I can finally talk in more detail about the movie that I worked on a year and some change ago. It's called September 5, Moritz's movie. He is currently in Los Angeles, California at the LA premiere of this big Hollywood movie. Produced by Sean Penn, you know, with Peter Sarsgaard, John Magaro, Ben Chaplin, Leonie Benesch. It is quite the movie, and he has been all over the world in the Zurich premiere. Now he's in L.A. He's going to go to New York. It's unbelievable. He's all over the map right now, and I'm so proud. So, Moritz, I doubt you'll have time to listen to this while you're gone over in La La Land, but if you do, just know that back in Munich here, we're thinking of you, and we love you, man. We're so proud of you. So finally, yeah, I can say the title, September 5. The trailer is out on YouTube, or everywhere, basically. It was so cool the other day. I went to go see this movie, Anora, at the City Kino in Munich, and I walked past the poster of September 5. And I was like, well, that's the first time I've ever gone to an actual, you know, proper cinema, looked at the film posters of the upcoming releases, and saw a feature film that, hey, I'm in that movie. hey, isn't that Paramount Pictures, Sean Penn produced feature film that I'm in? Hey, isn't that like one of my best friend's names on that poster? Scroll diddly doo. Look at that. Moritz Bender right here next to Peter Sarsgaard, produced by Sean Penn. It's pretty cool. My mom went to go see a Liam Neeson movie, and the trailer for September 5 played, and I am in the trailer twice. Now, albeit, my main job on that movie was working off camera with the actors, which was a miracle of a job to have. But as a little gift, I think that the director Tim Felbaum knew that I was hungry to be somehow shown in this movie. I was hungry for it. So they put me in costume every single day, and I was just in the background. It was so cool. It was so cool. And don't get your hopes up that you're gonna see me very easily. You have to kind of look a little bit. But I am very visible in three pretty key scenes of this movie. There's three long, important, dramatic scenes that behind the main actor speaking, you see my big tall ass with my greasy curly hair and my plaid shirt and my long mustache. God, they didn't let me cut my hair or my mustache for so long. Ugh. I remember how much I hated it. It was like in my mouth and the curly hair was like sticking to my ears. Anyway, September 5 is out, and after the tour, I got the opportunity to see it, and man, I'm spiraling. We have so much stuff here. Okay, let's start with one thing at a time. So the tour itself was just an incredible experience. There was only one city where I wasn't sure how well I was or wasn't doing until the very end, where then I felt like at the end, okay, I got it. I think I figured it out. It was Hamburg. It was the very first show on the tour. I was thankful that this comedian and actor, Tom Butcher was there. Very sweet, handsome guy. Came in, said hi at the end before we left. And also my friend Ben Dude from New Orleans, whom I, love and miss very much. Sometimes I get to work on video game projects with him and voiceover work. And he was there too. That was cool. But the audience, I was told before the tour ever started that Hamburg is a tough city for comedy. So I should have gone in really kind of, locking that in my mind, okay, so maybe this is just what I was being warned about. But, the thing was, especially as well, I think the audience was uncomfortable. I don't mean emotionally. I think they were physically uncomfortable. This whole tour was a standing show, which isn't great. I know that. But we booked this tour late. Usually you book a tour in general at least a year in advance. And we booked this maybe 7 months in advance. I did the show in January, and then I got the booking agent, I guess, in February or March. And then we booked everything for October. And that meant that seated locations just weren't an option because, they book those beautiful seated venues very far in advance. And so we could only get rock clubs. And if you do a rock club, you can do 500 people standing, but if you want to put chairs in, you can only get like 220 in there. And then if you want to sell 500 tickets, you have to do two nights, but then you're splitting up the revenue and it becomes less profitable because of the amount of money that you're, the ticket sales, like 50% of that goes to lighting up the venue, the costs, the fees of the electricity bill and the water bill and the labor of the employees and all that stuff. Like your ticket sales are like paying for the venue to be open that night. And if you split it up with less ticket sales for both nights, then you end up losing money because it's double the amount of bills that you pay, but less of like the lump sum at once. So I was a little bit like, okay. We have to do it standing so that it's actually makes sense to do it. But that meant that, 500 people are standing up. And usually that's not an issue when it's a rock show. I just went to Berlin for a night and saw McGee. This, it was a great rock show with my friend Robbie. And that was a lot of fun. That doesn't matter when you see a rock show because you're going to be dancing and shifting your weight around on the balls of your feet the whole time, and you're just kind of fine. But with a comedy show, it is an art form to be enjoyed on your butt. it is something you should enjoy on your booty, on your sitting meat. Like you need to be on your posterior so that you can relax enough. And you know, other venues handled that better. Berlin handled it well, and Munich handled it very well, I have to say. I was a little unsure how Munich would take it. But Hamburg really did not take that well. And this was the first show of the tour. So, you know, you go on stage and these rock venues, I mean, Munich did a great job with this. Strom in Munich did an amazing job. And Berlin also did a very good job, I have to say. So Hamburg had like three strikes for it. One was, it was a rock venue that was hosting a stand-up comedian. So they were not used to that. They didn't know how to light the stage for me. So I just assumed it would be pretty dark and there'd be like kind of one singular light on the microphone, maybe a couple of like softer, you know, reds and blues behind me just to give it like a little club vibe, but not too bright. When they announced me, I had to go through the audience from the back, which I hate doing that, but you know, what are you going to do? And I went through the audience and then got up on the stage. And it was like the house lights that you put on when you're trying to like clean up all the broken glass after a show. You know, it was like the lights on the stage was just this huge, wide, bright row of lights. It was just so insanely bright and so insanely hot. And the audience was all standing and they were standing away from the stage. They weren't like up on the stage. And Berlin and Munich, that was not an issue. People stood right at the stage, and I loved that. That felt good. It felt like we're here together, you know? But in Hamburg, they stepped like 6 feet or whatever, like 2 meters away from the stage. So then you have the cramming issue of people in the back who were also standing, and then they're getting pushed back. And then the people in the front are like pushed back a bit. And then at some point, so I'm sweating. The lights are too bright. The jokes aren't hitting super hard at first. I'm going, oh man, you know, maybe this is going to be a bad tour. You know, because people are like kind of talking to each other. They're like shuffling around, and I was just thinking like, man, am I that boring? Like, the people I could see and hear at least in the front rows is like, are they not that interested in this? So I was getting really nervous, and my mouth was getting dry, and I was losing my flow. And then to top it all off, the people in the front, they took like a few steps forward and then they sat down on the floor like crisscross applesauce. I mean, guys, come on. I mean, I felt bad for them, but at the same time, I was like, it's just, you know, come on. Everyone in here is like relatively young. There were some seats on the outer sides and I saw like older people and people who needed like disability seats and stuff like that. I was like, cool, they got their seats. But I looked at them and, you know, most of my audience is like 25 to 35. And I was like, come on, guys, we can do this. Just, you know, it's an hour. Let's have some fun. But I also think the room was really hot because, I mean, I greatly miss air conditioning in those kinds of environments. But, you know, it was pretty cold outside. And with the door cracked, there is some air. But I saw young, skinny women with the jacket over their arm, and they had like a brochure of upcoming events, and they were fanning themselves like a grandmother in church in the South. It was too hot. A skinny person fanning themselves with a pamphlet of like upcoming events. Not a good sign. Not a good sign at all. So then, yeah, people, they're shuffling and talking and sitting down on the floor, which was incredibly distracting. I was so scared I was going to lose my train of thought because, like I said at the beginning, there's like a mouth rhythm to keep myself on track. And I take the laugh breaks to like play the next part of the next thing in my head, like to kind of protect myself from losing the thought, you know, like it's a machinery. It's very well oiled, and with something, with people talking, and then like seeing the people fanning themselves because they were so hot, and I started to feel bad for them, and then started sitting on the floor, And then the first 10 minutes of jokes weren't really landing. And I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. This is going to go so bad. Then it got a little better for a while. Then people like, then they were settled, right? And then there was like a dip in the middle of the show. There was a little gap in the middle. I think it was, I have one joke that gets mixed reviews every time, but I kept it because when they laugh hard. And when they get uncomfortable, they really get uncomfortable. So for me, it's good to have extreme reactions as long as people aren't, you know, literally picketing or protesting the event, which no one did, you know. But I stood by the joke, and the joke was basically towards the middle-ish of the show. There's a section I do, a pretty long section I do about water that I really like. And I prepared people for it and said, you know, this is going to be the big water section. And I do a lot of jokes about like Sprudelwasser and Apfelsaftschorle and beer and all this stuff. And there's a point where I say the German water is so delicious and so like so clean and healthy. Where along the lines did they get tricked into believing that they prefer sparkling water? Although it wouldn't be the first time Germans got tricked into believing something terrible was the right thing, you know. Or the first, you know, it wouldn't be the first time they were convinced something terrible was the right thing. And yeah, you know, it's a little nasy joke. And, you know, I think that spending like 10 minutes building up that, building up all of that, and to not even say the word, you know, I was pretty proud of that, you know, and I thought, well, it's getting some gut reactions, but in Hamburg, woof. That was a rough reaction. Not much laughter. and the uncomfortableness was borderline like, Jordan, come on, you know? It was borderline, ew, man, I thought you were better than this. And I was like, oh no. But I just kind of laughed. I was like, just move along. I just laughed kind of at myself or like at the awkwardness. And I think I said something like, oh, you know, come on, guys, I had to do one, and I did it so tastefully, and then I just moved, and then I just moved on. I was like, but anyway, Germans have strict standards. you'll see it. Even if you watch the special in the show notes, which you should, please go watch my special, there's a moment exactly when that happens that I think I even say the same thing, like, you know, I had to do it, I wanted to do it tastefully. There's always a little reaction from people, but I love it. It is funny. I mean, I'm happy with the joke, but in Hamburg it did not fly. And then I had to get them back again. So it's just like the intro is tough. The people are uncomfortable. They're sitting down. They're talking. You know, I get them for a little bit. You know, I feel some good laughs, and then it kind of dips again in the middle, and then finally the last stretch. Then I had them back. Then everyone you know warmed up. And was able to laugh again and smile again. And I thought, okay, it's going to be all right. I was nervous that at the end of the show, nobody would want to like wait in line to talk again. This is how I knew that I did fine. This is how I knew that I did all right and that I shouldn't worry. I finished the show to a really nice applause. People were really happy. And I walked back to my room in the back, drank a lot of water, took a little note to myself of like, okay, well, maybe we fix this for the next one. And then I came back out, and there was, as it has been, I'm very grateful to say, as it has been for every show, a pretty long line of people waiting to say hello. And there was like a bodyguard security guard guy who, you know, kept the line to like one person at a time and took photos of people for us, you know, and people bought some socks. And there was a couple of elderly, I say elderly, but you know, I don't know if they're 60s or late 50s or something. But these women who came, well, they must be older than that. It doesn't matter. They flew from the UK. They flew from London to see that show. That's crazy. Like, who would go that far? I'm not like the Rolling Stones or something. You know, it's not like, oh man, it's their last stadium tour and they're not going to come to the UK. We'd better fly the hour and a half or whatever it is to, you know, to Hamburg or Munich and go see a show. It was like, I was like, I'll play more shows, you know, like maybe even one day I'll get to go to the UK, you know, but that's really crazy. So I was worried about Hamburg the most out of all the shows. But in the end, it felt redeemed. I was like, okay, people still waited in line. They still bought merch. They still took photos. They were so nice. So yeah, it was definitely the only Rocky show. Berlin, so then, you know, went to the hotel, woke up the next morning, took my train to Berlin, just traveled alone. I had my merch bag, and I had a backpack with my clothes. And then I took the train to Berlin. That was cool. Settled in there, got my stuff together, went to the venue, checked the sound and the lights. Everything looks good. The guys were really nice. That was also a funny situation where you could tell that they just didn't really know what was going to take place. Like, again, rock venues hosting one man talking into a microphone, you know, it's weird for them. They just don't know what to do. but then we set it up, and that was, and then people, you know, they filled out the whole room. And that was a great audience. There was a woman, like right on the stage of that show, I love her. She was my muse. Like, she, I could do no wrong by her. If I did the most subtle facial expression to emphasize a joke, an eye roll, or anything, this girl was howling, like clapping her hands, slamming her hand on the stage, hair flying around. I loved her. I was like, yes, yes, laugh. Feed me, Seymour. Feed me. I, whoever you are, if that was you, you're amazing. That show went very well. I had a good little, I couldn't really party after that show because I had to go back to Munich the next day. Although Berlin would have been a great place to go party. My agency was there. It was good to see them. I don't get to see them very much. They helped me sell merch. I signed socks, took photos of people. Again, long line of people to take photos. It was great. And then I had a couple of days off. We came back home. And then back-to-back shows at Munich, in Munich at the Strom. And that's just such a great, that's a great experience. You know, this venue, this venue ended up being perfect. I was very happy with this venue. You know, if people are going to have to stand, if it has to be this kind of arrangement, well, at least, you know, it's something in a venue that I admire, where I've seen artists that I really like. And, I have no complaints about Munich at all. I loved it. The first show in Munich, I feel like maybe that should have been the one that I also filmed. Like, I think next year I'll film, because next year's tour, I have two back-to-back shows in Munich at the same place again, this beautiful seated theater called the Werk 7, Work 7, and I'll film both and then cut the best, like, responses of each joke together to make one show. That's what every comedian does. Like, it's usually two or three shows that they shoot, and then they cut it all together to make a proper special. And I think I'll do that for next year. And I should have done that for this year, although I'm very happy still with this special that's in the show notes, and please go watch it. But the first show at the Munich venue had all the family and friends and stuff there too. And it's just like all my people were there. So when the audience laughed, my people loved that so much for me that it made them laugh even harder, and then it made the other people laugh harder, and it was just like the vibe was so good, and you know, my heart was pounding, but it was just such a great experience. That was a blast. And then the next night, also just a great audience, good people. Had a couple different friends helping me with the merch table. The venue owners were very kind. Everyone was, I think, you know, it's a funny thing at all these venues. When you show up, people are a little, you know, unless it's like a theater thing, at these rock venues, whenever you show up, even as the guy who sold out the venue, it does sometimes kind of feel that you have to like, what do you call it? Like not defend yourself, but like prove yourself. Sometimes it feels like you still have to prove yourself to these people, like the venue runners, the people who are like organizing everything. They're a little bit like, hey, you know, they not standoffish, but just a little like, well, you know, let's see. He ain't no rock band. Let's see how it goes. And literally every single time, all four shows, there was someone managing the evening. And once the room is packed out to the brim, they get very excited. And then when the show's over, when they finally see what I do, then they're the nicest people. They come like, hey, do you want, man, I'll bring you want a case of beer for you and your friends? You know, like, suddenly it's like very, very friendly. But, you know, that's funny. That's how it is. And I'd rather it be that way than, you know, than the other way around, where I show up and they're super nice and then they see me perform and then they get weird and quiet. That would be terrible. But, yeah, great tour. The special's in the show notes. Please go watch it. And yeah, so the morning after that last show, the very first thing I did was go to the film offices of the major German production company called Constantin, and as press, because this little old podcast is apparently press worthy, and they let me in to go see September 5. I got to see a private screening. It comes out, it's coming out like now, huh? What's the new date? There's a new date, because it was supposed to come out the 9th, I think, but it got moved. Let me just see. I know that it's like, maybe it's this, is it today? There's a new date for it somewhere in November, but I don't know right now. I can't. Oh, no, no. September. Oh, sorry. November 29. November 29. So it's a little over 2 weeks from now. It comes out in the States. I think it comes out the same time here. I'm not really sure. But yeah, that's the movie that I talked about for a very, very long time that I'm really happy I got to work on. I'm in the trailer twice, and I'm in the movie in the background a lot. I was happy to see that it was more than I expected. The movie's great. I'm going to wait until we can finally get Moritz on the show before we really dive into it. Of course, I have a surprise for Moritz. I think we can watch the trailer together here. I got, you know, some funny stories from the set to talk about. He's going to come back on the show and have all these experiences of like the LA premiere and all this New York stuff, and he's going to come back with like sunglasses and gold chains and leather jackets and just be too cool to talk to me anymore. He's going to come back with like lip filler and Botox. Hey, what's up? He's going to only always have a cigarette in his, but in between his fingers, and he's going to only call me kid. What do you want, kid? yeah. And does this come out on, wow, hey, look at that. This comes out on my birthday. I didn't think of it like that. Wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, happy birthday to me. 34, man. That's crazy. That's really crazy. I remember when I was 30 and having a few friends in my life who were 34, and that just felt significantly different. It's funny how just a couple of years feels so significantly different. Now I'm 34 and I'm like, oh my God, I have friends who are like 27. They must think I'm ancient, you know? And I feel myself grunting like, ugh. Every time I get out of the seat now, my back hurts every morning. It's just like, God, I'm already falling apart. But yeah, some things here at the end. I can't do a very long show today, unfortunately, but I did want to give you guys something. But I'm going to be back now, like weekly, so it's going to be all right. So that was the tour. I started a new therapist, so that's exciting. And I'm going to be kind of blogging and blah, blah, blogging with you guys about the journey of my insane ADHD testing process. I started therapy, and pretty quickly into our sessions, she was like, you need to get tested for ADHD. And I was like, yeah, that checks out. And then I went to this, first she said, first you have to go to this, your general practitioner, and get them to sign a form for the insurance. And I was like, okay. And I went to my general practitioner, and then this lady was like, okay, you want to go to therapy? What are you in therapy for? sorry, I'm still kind of sick. I was just like, it was a female doctor, and she was really nice, but it's just so funny. She was there in like a white coat and sneakers, and she's like, what are you taking therapy for? You know? And I was like, I've got some issues with my dad, I think that's wrong. You know? And she was like, okay, you don't have to say anything else about it. And I was like, yeah, I'm just, you know, kind of just working through my stuff. And she's like, okay. And then she's like, okay, well, the only thing I want to do is I want to do an EKG and a blood test. And I was like, excuse me, what? I've never had an EKG before. And that was, let me tell you, first time ever, freaky dicky. Like, I maybe it's a little late that I've never had one. I also should just get regular checkups. I don't know why that I don't think about that ever. But, man, if you've never had one before, it's like, it feels like you're letting like an alien octopus electrocute you and like suck your soul out of your belly button and nipples and stuff. You're like, I'm shirtless laying on this, cold, like plastic leather incline bed, and some 20-year-old, nurse puts like 11 of these sticky nodes all over my chest and my belly and stuff, and they just take a reading, and it was so weird. And I thought, this is because I'm taking therapy. Like, I needed her to sign a piece of paper so that my therapist gets paid by the insurance, and I'm taking an EKG. This feels extreme. And then they took a big blood test. They took a big old gallon out of me, and that also kind of was a little bit freaky. Like, well, I guess you have to see if I get prescribed medications, if I'm healthy enough to take them, maybe that's what this is for. So then I did all that. And then I wrote my therapist. I was like, hey, so I got the form. I got everything. Like, let's rock and roll. And then, the official, I had an appointment with this ADHD clinic. And the way that I've heard other friends who have been diagnosed and like what they did and how it worked was like, you go in, you have a consultation, and they basically, you know, I don't think they like prescribe you something on the dot, but like, it's basically you do a test. You go in and you make a test with them. That's not what happened here at all. It was really extreme. Like, well, not the first meeting, but you'll see. Like, I went in and I was talking to the doctor, also a very nice doctor. And she basically, we went through like a bit of a questionnaire together. And I explained, you know, why I wasn't in therapy and, you know, working with the doctor I really enjoy. And she just, you know, she thinks I should get tested. And she asked a few things about my behavior and about like childhood and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah. And I thought, okay, maybe this is the test. And she's like, okay, well, I'm going to make another appointment with you. I want you to do an MRI and an EEG. I think that's the other one. But it's like, now you're going to put like electrodes on my head and put me into the MRI machine, which I'm horribly claustrophobic. You're going to put my big ass into this MRI machine and expect me not to freak out? She's like, most people just fall asleep. I was like, I'm scared talking about it. And I really was asking, I was like, is this standard procedure just to see if I have like issues focusing? Like, this is crazy. So I'm going to be letting you guys know how that unfolds. The appointment isn't for a while because they're very booked out all the time. But yeah. Crazy, right? I never would have thought that in a million years just for getting an ADHD test. Halloween came and went. Had a good Halloween party. Had a really good time. Got my birthday the day that this comes out. Then Thanksgiving. And shout out to TEDx Munich. Some of you might remember a few years ago, I performed a TED Talk event in Munich, the TEDx event, where I played on this beautiful stage. I played guitar and sang a few songs, told a couple stories. That was really nice. And now they invited me back again And I just, but as a comedian, and I did it last Sunday. Yeah, last Sunday. And I was there for a long time, but then had a good, like, a funny 10-minute slot. And I told one of my favorite stories from this comedy special, which is in the show notes, and you should watch it. But, all right, I think I have to wrap it up there for today, but I'm going to let you guys, or I'm going to keep you guys updated, and I'm going to be back every week now, and I'll let you know, hopefully, when Moritz can be on the show. Again, like, have fun out there, Moritz, if you're listening. Happy birthday to me, if you're hearing this on the 14th. And thanks, guys, for being here, and I hope you enjoyed it. It'll be a lot of fun. If you came on the tour and you were a part of that journey with me, thank you so much. It means a lot to me. We have a new tour dates booked, 11 cities. It's crazy. It'll be for 2025. And don't worry, guys, it's all seated theaters. So everyone's little bum can get nice and squishy, and the ankles can rest. The knees can relax, okay? And yeah. To support me by watching the special, liking it, subscribing. You know the drill. Really means a lot, guys. I love you. Thank you for listening, and have a great week. Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are